Good evening and welcome to a very special edition of The Forum. On this evening's forum, we bring you the Green Party's Presidential Candidate Forum, featuring five candidates. This was recorded on July 24th at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. As this Presidential Candidate Forum took more than an hour, we will bring you the conclusion next week. But let's start right at the beginning. The very first voice you'll hear will be that of the Green Party's 2004 presidential candidate, David Cobb.
George Martin is going to introduce each of our candidates. We'll ask you to hold your applause until all the candidates have been introduced. The format is actually quite simple. Each candidate will be given 3 minutes to make an opening statement. At the end of that, we will engage a series of questions from your moderators. Each candidate will be given 2 minutes to respond, and that 2 minutes will be timed. Holly Hart is the timekeeper. At 30 seconds, she'll hold up a card. At 10 seconds, she will begin to count down. At that time, she will stand up. Holly will stand up and say time, and which of us asks the question will ensure that you will stop speaking at the end of that sentence. I say with much love and respect, but we will do so. So now I want to reintroduce my very good friend and comrade, George Martin, who will introduce your candidates.
Thank you. Listen up, housekeeping note. Please turn off your cell phones. Please turn off your cell phones. Thank you. I have the honor of introducing our candidates, and we'll do it alphabetically. First, Daryl Cherney. Daryl is an Earth First activist. He headed the saving of the Headwater Groves in California and has sued the FBI successfully. Second, SKCM Curry.
That's not my name. It's pseudonym Kinamo Christian Moyoasife Curry. Say my name.
Well, thank you, but I'm sorry I wasn't given that information.
Okay.
Don't come down on me like
no,
that.
Just
say, say your name one more time for everybody.
Pseudonym Kinamo Christian Moyoasife Curry.
Yeah.
All right. She is the future president of the United States from South Central Los Angeles. A founding member of the Black Caucus and strong community activist. Third, Bill Kremel. Bill is a distinguished professor emeritus of political science at the University of South Carolina with a JD from Northwestern Law School and a PhD from Indiana University. Bill. Next is Kent Mesplay. Kent is a scientist and an air quality inspector for the County of San Diego. He is a long-term advocate of indigenous people and a climate change activist. Kent.
Thank you.
And Jill Stein, medical doctor, political organizer, and rabble rouser. And the 2012 Green Party presidential candidate, Jill Stein.
You got the mic. So opening statements from.
Oh yeah. Wake me up here. Still on the road and little dolls.
Together, we're better together.
All right, that's why we're teaming this. All right. We want to entertain a 3-minute opening statement from each candidate, and we'd like to be 3 minutes so that we can give fair justice to everyone in terms of equal time and also move through the question period, which is going to be very important. Let's start with Daryl Cherney.
I think we have numbers.
Okay.
Oh, you do. You're ahead of me. Number one is?
George.
You got it, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. This is an exciting and wonderful thing.
I would like to start to talk about myself, but I just can't do that. I have to thank a lot of people. I want to thank people who have read things that I've written in this room, people like Hillary and Mayor Dune and then so forth, who got back to me, and there's been an intellectual interchange with some of you that goes back some years. And that's very important to me. I want to thank the 55 people who were signatories for me. That's really wonderful. For all the people who read my statement, I haven't looked at the numbers lately, but it's about 3 days ago, it was 125 people. Thank you for reading that statement. Okay? I can't go on from here without thanking three people who are no longer with us. The first is Dr. Victor G. Rosenblum, who mentored me in law. He was the president of the American Judicature Society. The second is Dr. Charles Heineman, who mentored me in the discipline of political science and American government. And the third is a marvelous, absolutely fantastic woman by the name of Lynn Ostrom. How many of you here know who Lynn Ostrom was? John, tell us. She mentored me in the philosophy of science. She is still the only woman to have won the Nobel Prize in economics. Read about this woman. A fantastic person. All right. I have to be a little selfish. All right. I am a theorist. Do not shy away from theorists. The most transformative political leaders in history were well-read. Many of them themselves made theoretical contributions. What do you mean by theory? It's not just learning facts. It's good to know things. Everybody in this room is a smart person who knows a lot. Do you keep growing your cognitive map? Do you keep expanding the very structure of how you understand things? That's what I do. I make no apologies for it. I am a theorist. I've published 9 books. I've lectured all over the world. I lectured at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Princeton. I was invited twice to be a visiting professor at the University of Peking. And I have had that kind of experience, as well as being taken to Russia to meet with Mikhail Gorbachev.
Time.
What an experience that was. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. And next we have Alonis Curry. Excuse me, I didn't have a chance to write the full name down. Don't want to take anything away, but.
3 minutes, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. And evening. My name is really important, like the black women who've been shot here in the U.S. wrongly. So not saying my name minimizes me. Pseudonym, can you say pseudonym?
Pseudonym.
Kinamo.
Kinamo.
Christian.
Christian.
Moyawasife.
Moyawasife.
Curry.
Curry.
I can say Schwarzenegger. So you can say my name. I'm not a community activist. I'm a strategist, and I'm educated. So sometimes, without knowing, we can be unhealthy with each other. One of the reasons I'm running is because I ran in 2008 for VP, because I think it's really important that we Greens all become sophisticated and use our intellect to move our nation forward. When I look around, I'm happy this much. Because when I just came from Cleveland, Ohio, and there's 800 black folk sitting there thinking through how to do a movement. So something, we're unhealthy. We don't look like America, do we? And America is browning. So it's critically important that we all might not be here in 30 years, so that we train people to lead. I'm from South Central Los Angeles, from a two-parent home. I've lived in Ghana, West Africa, since I was 26 years old. And it was a question, what do you want to accomplish before you die? And at 26, y'all know what color is your parachute?
Yeah.
Come on, that book changed my life. I'm sitting in a bakery, What do you want to accomplish before you die? I want to live and work in Africa. Next question. What's prevented you from doing that now? Thought about it. Nothing. Not married. I don't have kids. I can manage my student loan. So I left. So one of the reasons I'm running is to ask us questions. How come we Greens don't look like America? How can we Greens ensure that the next 20 to 30 years of our development, that we change it? I'm here to introduce the Green Way. And the Green Way is a path and a strategy so that we empower our fellow citizens to understand that they're already there. We just haven't had a messenger and a message to get them in. Green is an everyday word. So how come Green Party and Green Movement aren't? That's the question I want my candidacy to explore and move all of us forward to paint the White House green.
Are you at the third number?
Who's three? Three? Yeah. Oh, sorry.
So, hi, everybody. It's really great to see everyone here. It's great to be honored with the presence of these wonderful candidates here on stage. It's a sign, I think, of the health of the party and the engagement of the party that we have many candidates that are running this year. That's very exciting. Big thank you to the organizers of this event and of this wonderful convention. This is really a historic moment right now, and I can say that having run for this office 4 years ago, I can tell you it's the difference between night and day. As Greens, we've been ahead of the curve on just about everything you can imagine, from equal marriage to a green economy to nonviolent conflict resolution, opposing corporate personhood, thanks to certain members of our party who've been leading the charge on that count. As Greens, we've been ahead of the curve, and the curve has caught up to us, and it's time for us to stand up and really make the most of this historic moment. It truly is a transformative moment. We launched our campaign about a month ago, and we were welcomed to do that with open arms by Democracy Now!, which in the last race really didn't cover us until the very end. What a sign of progress that they've welcomed us to actually make our announcement on Democracy Now! And really gave us a wonderful reception, I have to say, particularly off camera. It was just great to see that as Greens, we have really become the voice of the social movement as its political mission. And as we all know, it takes a social movement to change the world, but it also takes a political movement to change the power structure. And that is our job at Greens, as Greens, and this is a time like none other. We've been covered by all sorts of outlets in the media that didn't touch us with a 10-foot pole throughout the entire 2012 race. So that includes not only Democracy Now!, the Real News Network, The Nation, L Magazine, yes, Counterpunch, yes, we had a terrific article in Counterpunch. These articles are going viral. The energy is there like it's never been there before. We are close to making matching funds already. You may remember in 2012, it was the last possible day that we could qualify, that we made it. By the skin of our teeth. This time we are practically there, setting a historical record. That's a tribute to everyone in this room. And I would just say that this is the moment we have worked for a generation, for our lives. That moment has arrived. Let's stand up and use it. Thank you.
Thank you, it's great to be here. My name is Kent Mesplay. I'm a longtime Green Party member. I've run for president before. Basically, I've been runner-up to the runner-up three times while working full-time. Not exactly the result that I wanted, but I'm pleased with it. I think all of us here are going to do a great job reaching out to our constituency, to building and broadening the base of the movement and the party. And we've been talking amongst ourselves that we're all going to take the upper road. I haven't spoken with Bill yet, but I get the sense that he's on board with a positive approach. If we take the philosophy of scarcity, then we would have this as a cutthroat competition. But if we consider the abundance that we have and the full opportunity that we have, then we can build upon what we've done before and not do the backsliding that the corporate parties tend to do each and every season. I really do believe that we can win. David Cobb in the past has commented over and over with each cycle that we are more organized and better prepared than before. And I think hearing Jill speak, we know that we're already there. So ballot access is critical. I think many people who are watching this, I'm not necessarily speaking to the group, don't realize how uneven the playing field is. It's greatly tipped in the wrong direction. So we have our own justice issues just in being able to have a voice. But in this day and age, using the technology that we have with our communication ability, for example, we can really launch a green candidate into the White House, hopefully with a soft landing. But it's absolutely possible. Jill, last time, I believe, was available to about 82.1% of the populace. And as a longtime candidate, I've said, I remember in Arizona, I told Jill, I said, look, you have to be prepared to be arrested trying to get into the debates. David Cobb basically led the way, and she stepped up and was arrested. And we really face an unfair system. I've been a longtime advocate about the importance of climate change as a major security issue. That is one of the key defining issues of our time. And I'll be speaking some more about that. I'm also here to basically start my campaign in terms of encouraging those of you who are present to help us all get our campaigns off the ground and then watch us soar. So thank you to the Presidential Campaign Support Committee and the National Women's Caucus. It's good to be here.
My name is Daryl Cherney. I'm an Earth First activist from the Redwood biome of Northern California. I live about 200 miles north of San Francisco. I did co-found and saw all the way through for 17 years the campaign to save Headwaters Forest, and it is now the Headwaters Forest National Reserve. During that campaign, Judy Barry and I, the late, great, feminist, radical Earth Firster, mother of two, and fancy fiddler, Judy Barry and I were car bombed on our way to a musical performance at University of California in Santa Cruz. We were immediately, as in instantly, arrested by the FBI for being bombers. And we sued. Judy survived, although she was crippled for the last 7 years of her life when she died from cancer, but we sued them for violations of free speech, that they knew we were innocent and they lied about it in order to silence us. And it went to trial in 2002, and a jury awarded us $4.4 million, and we collected. Perhaps the thing I want to be known most for, by the way, is being a dad. I am an older dad of a 3-year-old girl. Her name is Abigail. Hi, Abby. And nothing has changed my life more. Nothing has expanded my vision. Nothing has given me more compassion than being a father. Every time I hear of a child being bombed, whether it's in Palestine or Iraq or Afghanistan, my heart breaks. My heart breaks when the parents are killed. My heart breaks when the grandparents are killed. My heart breaks, and never has it broken so much as since I became a father. So nothing has expanded my activism more. I became a registered Green in 1990, 91, and thereabouts. And I've actually before that, I ran for Congress in the Democratic primary against a conservative Democrat. I held office on the hospital board in my local area. And I've also managed a couple of campaigns, including an initiative campaign, and won a number of them. This is a great time to run for president. The two major parties are putting forth really weak candidates, and the Green Party can make a huge difference this time around. We need leadership to escape us, to help us escape from the precipice that we are all falling into right now. Our lives are at stake. The life of every single creature on this planet is at stake, and that's why the Green Party needs to rise to the occasion. I'm also a pagan. I want you to know that. I believe in Mother Earth. I honor the Earth Mother. And therefore, I want to identify new constituencies that the Green Party can target, including the Harry Potter voting bloc. The Lord of the Rings voting bloc. I want the Star Trek voting bloc. I also want, of course, the environmental voting bloc, and I want to have the 9/11 truth voting bloc. I want the cannabis voting bloc, and I want the entire United States to hear what we have to say. Thank you.
All right, let's hear it for all our candidates.
So now we'll begin our questions. A reminder, a brief 2-minute response. Haraja.
Hadija.
Say your name.
Hadija. Black Lives Matter movement has galvanized this country. What are your concrete proposals to address systemic racism in America and state violence against black people?
Number, I think you're number one.
Follow our order.
Yes, I would recommend that we follow our order, and what we will do is shift each time.
Correct.
So we'll start with number two.
Wow. Number two. I was, as I mentioned earlier, I was in Cleveland, Ohio with the Black Lives Movement. So I am a strategist, and we'll be having the global Black Lives Matter in Ghana next year. To deal with racism, we have to be honest about everything. Our campaign will launch in November to highlight the role that the Berlin Conference played in taking over Africa. I'm degreed in Black Studies, so this is my area of expertise. What needs to happen is, like I shared with us earlier, we got to ask ourselves questions, because Black lives are the future of the Green Party. I joined because I held my nose and voted for Al Gore with Lieberman. I will never hold my nose again. Black folk ready to join, but we have to be the party that's welcoming and open. To deal with, I don't believe in racism. There's one race. What's the race called?
Yeah,
just blow that off. I mean, come on. I just always thought that was odd, because we're one race. So I think being honest and us changing the dialogue. So when someone say racism, we say, that's just an ism. So I think we have the power to change the dialogue with enlightening people about the history, like the Berlin Conference, like the enslavement. Stop saying slave. It's enslavement. Folks were kidnapped and enslaved. So I'm poised to help ensure that the Black Lives Matter movement, because as soon as I leave here, I'm going back to Cleveland, can galvanize our party to move us forward. This is my new one. Peace and power. I'm done. Thank you.
Great. So the Black Lives Matter movement, I think, you know, it is a crisis. It represents a crisis of racial justice. We're in a moment which is, you know, beyond where we have been before, a moment around which we must all mobilize, because our lives are at stake, society's at stake, and what's happening in the Black Lives Matter movement represents really the enduring crisis of a country founded on the criminal institution of slavery. And that slavery lives on in a continuous line through lynchings, through Jim Crow, through the drug wars, through the police state, through police violence, through a school system in which the schools of community of color are under attack, in a policy of test, punish, and privatize, embraced by both Democrats and Republicans. This is part of a major systemic institution, really, of racism that is expressed in many ways. And we see the police violence, which is the most critical and really the tip of the iceberg that we see in the Black Lives Matter movement. But it's not only police violence, it's also economic violence. It's violence in health. If you look at mortality rates, for example, the average African American who on the whole also does not have access to good education is dying 14 years ahead of the average Caucasian. That is just shocking. That's like murder across the society. And what we need is a systemic fix. We need a national action program for racial justice now. Our campaign is involved in this. We're working with Kali Okuno of the Malcolm X grassroots movement and others to bring those
Please
solutions
conclude.
Into policy now. Thank you.
Number four.
Okay. I didn't realize my number was up so soon. Okay. What's happening with racism is a crisis, but it's also a symptom of our current national pervasive zeitgeist, the spirit of our time, which is sick with fear and intolerance. So this affects authority figures who have it within their minds and within their souls all too often that they are really defending the country against something. Ever since 9/11, which incidentally was 9/11, that's one of the lost lessons. It's who you're going to call during a time of great national emergency. Ever since 9/11, we've been spiraling downward as a free and open society. So the features that were there, that were lingering and that were not so obvious, are becoming more obvious because it's bursting through the surface, but also we have the technology available to catch these things faster. So as Sandra Bland commented, when she was being attacked, she thanked the people for recording her. She knew how important those cell phones were, and she died a few days later. She was murdered. I've been a longtime activist regarding indigenous rights. I grew up with tribal people in the Eastern Highlands of Papua New Guinea. This was part of my first 10 years. So I grew up being the person with a different skin color. So I got to see it from a different perspective. But at the time, I didn't view myself as being part of a different race. I'm also interested in tribal advocacy and respecting the treaties, et cetera. 2 minutes is short. Thank you, Holly. Thank
Sorry
you.
About that.
As George told you, I'm an emeritus professor at the University of South Carolina. I spent almost all of my academic career there. It's a tough place from a racial standpoint. And I'm only going to mention two or three things. When the Democratic Party tried to get rid of Gilda Cobb Hunter, an outstanding and outspoken black woman from the state legislature, a bunch of us in the United Citizens Party, look up the United Citizens Party sometime, all right? Which was a black party that was resuscitated by a bunch of us. We went down and fought for Gilda Cobb Hunter. Gilda Cobb Hunter won, and if you followed the flag, the whole business with the Confederate flag, she was one of the two principal people who fought to bring the Confederate flag down from the corner of Main and Gervais Street. And, you know, that's something that some white folks did. I was always a marshal for the NAACP, Martin Luther King marches. The important thing is this, that when Mr. Foote shot 9 beautiful black people who were in Bible study down in Charleston, South Carolina, the white people started to come out. The percentage of whites that appeared in those kinds of demonstrations was a great increase over the Martin Luther King marches and some of the other stuff, which wasn't all that great in South Carolina, but a lot of people got religion. And you can change. And that's what we have to fight for. Thank you.
if we require our airline pilots to have mental health exams before they take all of our lives into the air, we should be requiring our law enforcement officers to be taking mental health exams. Too many people coming here and treating people with darker color skin as the enemy, just as they were taught to do in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, sugar. I want to talk about sugar for a little bit because part of my campaign is to have a war on sugar, but there was no greater consumer of sugar than the police officers of America. So I want to start a campaign called Bagels Not Donuts. And I want to know not just how many of them have PTSD, I want to know how many of them are junk, how many of them were pumped up on a box of Dunkin' Donuts before they went out and did the damage they did. I am not kidding. I'm not kidding. It really affects your temper. Now, in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement, we need to increase our social services for all of our children. We need to make sure that our schools are equal under the 14th Amendment. The school buses are equal. The schools are equal. The teachers are equal. But just as importantly, we need to be sure that we have social services. Our children are the most important resource that we have. And every time you put a mother in jail, a father in jail, you're taking away that child's parents, and that is unconscionable. I think we also need to change the language as well. Honestly, white and black, that means the opposite, right? Well, guess what? I'm not this color. I'm not this color. And we are tan and we are brown and we are shades in between. And if we start to refer to ourselves as the colors we are, it might not sound as menacing. So in any case, we need to change the language. We need to really monitor our police officers. We need to extend social services for everybody and encourage our people to succeed in this world.
The next question, and I'll remind you that we'll start with candidate number 3. What is your plan to support working class households led by women of any stripe, especially as regards temporary assistance for needy families, Section 8, and other such programs?
Women are so often the heads of families, and so often in poverty, and so often fighting an incredible uphill battle against sexism, against the necessities of trying to rear our families and take care of our parents. Women are really the core of our communities in so many ways, but have really been left with very poor resources. Women are paid, what is it now, 78 cents on the dollar? We need to be paid equally. We need an equal rights amendment for women, in fact, to be sure that we have equal pay and equal health care and equal access to all the benefits of society. We need a living wage, a national living wage of at least $15 an hour for everyone. Women will benefit more than anyone from that. We need to bring tipped workers up to parity with full wages. None of this $2.13 an hour, which is something on that order, which is what people who wait on tables are currently paid, which are largely women. We need Medicare for all, so that all people have health care, and that will benefit women and our children, obviously. We need a Green New Deal so that everyone has the right to a job. We need child care, which is provided as a right. We need after school. We need quality education as well. None of this privatization of our public schools. In Hillary Clinton's advertisement, with which she announced her campaign, she actually had a little vignette of a family that where the mother says, "I'm doing right by my child's school. How? By moving to a, quote, better area." We need all families to have the right to a quality education and the other aspects of economic rights. That's how we lift up women and all people.
If there's one thing that comes out of Congress every year that is under the radar, but it's an absolute disgrace, It's the fact that the SNAP program is tied to the farm bill. If you really want to get sick to your stomach, look at the farm bill supplements, subsidies. I'm sorry, Jan Hilgus, your man, Thad Cochran, Mississippi, that's where it's all coming from. We have got to separate SNAP from the farm bill. All right, long overdue. Much better funding. The WIC program, much better funding. Public housing, mixed housing. That's all this kind of stuff, and some of it's been on the table for years. We need to build a stronger government. That's something that I hope I get a chance to talk about, how to strengthen the government. Why have we lost all the time? But to answer the specific question, I'm responding with SNAP and WIC. Thank you.
In addition to what we've heard, we really need to restructure our society so that, were you next?
You're next.
Okay. Yep. Restructure our society so that more of our basic needs can be met on a local level. And what this needs is that we need more community gardens where generations can mix, where parents can be with children, where grandparents can show how it used to be. How one time we had, for example, victory gardens. Gardening shouldn't be just like a leisure sport. It should be viewed for what it is, a deep, purposeful connection to the earth that is healing and that provides us with basic emergency preparedness right then and there. It also promotes more healthful eating. That addresses issues regarding sugar and overall health care. We need to get away from being such a consumer-based society. So yes, I agree with what the other candidates have said. Certainly $15 an hour is a good start for a national living wage, but when we build upon that by encouraging such action as the growing of one's own food, we cut costs. And when we cut costs, that's basically as good as increasing wages. There are green solutions to most of our pressing societal problems. There just isn't the will to put them in place. And the basic problem that the status quo sees with green solutions is that it cuts consumption and it increases our independence. And when we can take better care of ourselves and our families, it's a threat to those who have centralized power and who are running our lives, often unfairly. Thank you.
There is no group on planet Earth who has been persecuted more and for so much time as women in this world. There's been a war on women since the Library of Alexandria was burned, since Hypernia was killed on its steps. No greater group has been so persecuted for so long. And why is that? Because we've developed a culture of war where the men become at the top of the heap, where might makes right instead of the nurturing of children, instead of the intuition that women bring. This is not something that's new, but it is something that has continued on forever. So of course I would support an equal rights amendment. But as a pagan, I would also tell you that I would like to see this world become matriarchal once again. That the child takes the woman's name, not the man's name, for goodness sake. And also that the men step up. That the President of the United States, if it winds up being a man, needs to step up and say, dads, men, this is what you need to do to take care of your kids, to take care of your family, and this is how I do it by example, and this is how we all should do it, because you are missing out on the greatest thing in the world if you leave your kid behind. You are missing out on the greatest thing that there is. We need to have free education for women. Nobody works harder than women do. As a mom in particular, as mothers in particular, $15 an hour at least, for goodness sake. You know, so we need to have these kind of social structure. I'll say the W word, welfare. Why the hell not? If somebody doesn't have the money and they got kids, we as a country need those children taken care of, we need those women taken care of, and so I will be supporting social services, housing, education, food banks, you name it, to make sure that the women of this nation are taken care of along with everybody else.
I'm about to hug everybody because the suggestions are right on. There's a doctor in Ghana, been connected to Ghana, as you know, since 1988. This is their saying: if you educate a woman, you educate a village. If you educate a man, you educate a man. Welfare to Work was one of the worst programs that our government came out with. It killed. I'm a Head Start baby, and I'm so proud to say that. Government programs that everyone has mentioned, we should do it. It's that simple. The second thing for me, outside of what we've talked about, is just having women be more empowered. You see what I did, say my name. We as women have to be more upfront about who we are and claim and name our strengths and our power. I'm 53 years old. I think once you get a certain age as a woman, that's when you blossom. Let's do that at 3 years old, so that little girls aren't being kicked and beaten and knocked over, that we as women stand up. I was fortunate to have 9 sisters. I didn't have to fight, okay? Hey. So I believe Head Start and other empowerment programs can help women start letting us unravel and repackage ourselves as strong, independent, powerful beings.
You're listening to the Green Party's Presidential Candidate Forum, recorded on July 24th at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. We'll be back with more after these messages.
There's been confusion over the position of Greens seeking presidential nomination with respect to our platform statement regarding the Zionist occupation of Palestine and our support for a one-state resolution. Will each of you please take this opportunity to clarify your own position?
Yes. I favor the one-state solution. That's the solution that GPUS has, as a body, decided upon. And it is the solution that will ensure that there is no underclass in the society. With a two-state solution, there would be an underclass. So basically, the one-state solution forces the Palestinians and the Jewish people to live together and work together in peace. The Palestinians will have to give up some too, some of the limited autonomy that they have in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. So I support the one-state solution. My understanding is that the Green Party in Israel for a long time has advocated for the two-state solution. We need to step back and look at this in an historic context, in that after the Holocaust, Jewish people really did need a place to go that was safe. It just wasn't addressed appropriately. You don't bring in people and settle them on top of others and then relocate them. So the manner in which that was done was improper. We're going to see this regarding climate refugees. We're going to see island nations going underwater. And there is no global governance. There are no governments that have stepped up to say what we're going to do about people who are displaced by war, displaced by famine, displaced by their nations going underwater. So we need to work this out so that a similar situation doesn't happen. And yes, the one-state solution is my preferred solution. Thank you.
Well, I just got finished reading, on the advice of the Palestinian Green Party Caucus, One Country by Ali Abu Nima. And never have I been so impressed with a proposal before. I am in favor of the one-state solution. There are a number of things that Ali said that I said before I read the book, and I want to repeat them. That everybody involved in this story has to be allowed their narrative. You cannot tell the Jewish people, no, we can't talk about the Holocaust, or we can't talk about the pogroms, which really lasted for a whole lot longer, which is the reason that we're here. If you want to boycott Caterpillar, which the BDS campaign wants to do, boycott it, not just because they sell bulldozers to bulldoze Palestinian homes, boycott them because they're trashing the forest of the United States. Boycott them because they're destroying our land as well as the Palestinian land. It is just unbelievable that Israel, which I basically believe, sadly as a Jew, I have to tell you because that is my background, is a criminal state. And I can't even believe that they would knock down so many food producing fruit trees and olive trees and just to get rid of the past. This is unconscionable. And so there has to be a one person, one vote democracy in Palestine, Israel, Jews and Palestinians living together, like the people in South Africa, like the people in Ireland, like the people in Belgium. This has been done. Ali takes a lot of this past work and puts it together. It is going to be difficult, but not only is it not impossible, it's necessary. Before I read any of the books I've read, and quite a few on the subject, I came to the conclusion that Israel as it is right now is not sustainable. It is headed for annihilation. It is headed for another Holocaust of the Jewish people, and that is as good a reason as any to get the one-state solution so that people can live in harmony. If we want one state for Israel, we should have all the countries living together in peace. Thank you.
My view on this is slightly different, and that is that we should start the discussion of the so-called Middle East, and I very much object to the notion of the Middle East. It's a terrible term. It's imperialistic, it's ethnocentric, it's Eurocentric, and it is geographically wrong. Okay? The Middle East is roughly the city of Chengdu, which is the capital of Sichuan province in China.
There you go.
All right, so let's come up with a new term.
Yes.
I have one, but I'm not going to use it because it offends some people. But it does. We're not going to solve that issue over there. I've said this for years. It's going to be solved in the United States. It's going to be solved on the Upper East Side of Manhattan when we finally put the American Israeli lobby in its place. That's where you start to solve the problem. And the next time somebody calls you anti-Semitic, if you're not anti-Semitic, sue them. That's a strategy no one's thought about. Sue someone who calls you anti-Semitic. That's slander, okay? And push back on these people who have dual national loyalties. Many of them have dual citizenships. And they have held our country hostage since 1948. Thank you.
Separate but equal has not worked, will not work. I'm in agreement with what's been said. It saddens me that we've allowed other folks to dictate our relationship with the Palestinians. They were there. Leave them alone, like the Native Americans. We have to just be very honest. I support the one-state solution. I'll quote Rodney King, can't we all just get along? It's about us claiming our humanity, speaking the truth. The power is with the majority of people because everybody wants humanity. So I think, I know that the strategy my campaign brings out will help us focus and deliver on humanity, not only for our nation, but for the globe.
Yeah, I'll agree with everyone on this panel, really, that because of the way that Palestine has now been carved up and occupied, I think most people, most authorities familiar with the conflict really understand that a two-state solution is no longer possible because of the way that Palestine has been carved up. But let me say further that what really matters, I think, immediately is how do we get there? And there is so much that we as the U.S. can do right now to stop the criminal Netanyahu government in its tracks by stopping the $8 million that we are funding every day the Israeli military. So let's start right there by stopping the funding of human rights violators, of war criminals, of those who are violating international law. And this should be subject not only to Israel, but how about Egypt? How about Saudi Arabia? How about stopping, in Martin Luther King's words, America, the USA, is the biggest purveyor of violence around the world. We need to stop funding the violence of everyone. We're arming both sides all around the world. We are on both sides of the conflict. We are arming basically every warlord that will agree to talk to us. So we can bring peace to Israel-Palestine. Already the people, the grassroots groups, the human rights groups across the borders of Israel and Palestine, they have made peace. We need to lift them up and support them, stop funding the war predators, and that goes for the whole war industry in this country.
As Greens, we understand that the global climate crisis is not coming. It's here, and it's going to get worse. What are each of your concrete plan to address the climate crisis and transition us in this country? And we'll start with candidate number 5.
Thank you. As I mentioned, I want to start by covering the White House in solar panels. Why nobody has done that since Reagan took them off, the ones that Jimmy Carter put on, I have no idea, because it's leadership by example. But if we need to ban, the use of just about all fossil fuels yesterday. Now you might say that is unrealistic, Daryl, and I'm gonna say it's unrealistic to keep burning them. And I know that every one of us burned them to get here, because we're all, but that means we're all in this together. And when, if you pull the plug on fossil fuels tomorrow, you are gonna watch a whole new wave of jobs and infrastructure just blossom in this country overnight, because we're not gonna have any more oil to burn, so we're gonna have to figure something out really quickly. Okay, so that's number one, ban fossil fuels. Hey, it's a national emergency, it's an international emergency, and that's just all there is to it. We, you know, probably need to nationalize some industries. I think we need to nationalize the military, the weapons industry, and I think we need to nationalize the fuel industry and just shut it down for good. Now, we also need to learn that not burning fossil fuels, we need public education. You know, Jimmy Carter put on his sweater in the White House, and everybody thinks that was lame. It's not lame. You have passive solar, skylights in your house. You have turning off the lights when you leave the room. You know, every time I leave my dorm or the bathroom in the dorm, I turn off the light. I make sure that I do that. If the building didn't have lights on all night long, if you turned off the lights when you left the room, we'd probably be reducing our fossil fuel use by 50% without making any lifestyle change at all. So we need a great shift in consciousness in order to do this. But here's the thing. That's what, to me, all the issues are about. A shift in consciousness. A shift in the way we think. To see the Earth as our mother, because that's exactly who she is.
I agree with you.
Candidate number one.
This isn't going to be solved until we do something that makes our government strong enough to ward off one more interest group. All right? Fossil fuel people own the place, and the banks own the place, and the insurance companies own the place. There's a great contradiction, and I've talked to several of you about this, the great contradiction in the Green Party, because we all came up on the participatory democracy, a fear of large government. We're talking about Tom Hayden, C. Wright Mills. There's a contradiction. You want a weak government? Because that's what you got. You've got a weak government, and we're part of it. And unless we turn around and follow probably the most important progressive statement that was ever made, Herbert Crowley, 1907, Jeffersonian goals by Hamiltonian means. And we have a government that's strong enough to stand up for the public, then we will win. We don't have that now.
Okay. I believe that we Greens have to have a strategy. It's 5 points. We need to refocus our energy. We need to drive. We need to simplify and then deliver. I believe we Greens can change our nation. Refocus. Let's diagnose what's wrong with us first. Let's then get an operational way of excellence with being Greens. And then restore growth, green growth. Our campaign's program is the Green Way, not the American Dream, because a dream's not sustainable. So we have to create a green way of living, which is quality, sustainability, and maintaining harmony and peace. How do we deliver that? By getting a messenger and a message out so we paint the White House green. This is what we can do to change our nation. We can do it.
Did people hear about Jim Hansen's study that was just published 3 days ago?
Yes.
Jim Hansen, foremost climate scientist, just published an article along with something like 16 other leading scientists in the field that had the bombshell news, which has been, I think, foreshadowed by the science for quite some time, that it's not going to be some 2 or 3 feet of sea level rise by the end of the century. It's going to be more than 10 feet within 50 years,
yes.
Which means basically goodbye Manhattan, goodbye East Coast, goodbye Florida, goodbye Gulf Coast. If we don't change now, that doesn't mean in the next election, it means now. There is no more time to lose. The clock is ticking. We as Greens have been talking about the solution for a long time. We're calling for an emergency greening of the economy. Remember your history when World War II began for the US and Pearl Harbor was bombed? You know how long it took to transform the economy into a war economy? 6 months, okay? 6 months. So that's about what we should take. 6 months, maybe 5 years, but let's green the economy right now. In doing that, we not only solve the climate crisis, but we also put everyone back to work now with a good living wage job that makes our communities and world healthier. We can do that now.
Future historians will look back on our time, and when everything else is forgotten, one of the key issues that we will be remembered for is climate change, our role in it since the Industrial Revolution, our inability to move quickly enough, the disappearance of species that is a mass extinction that is on our shoulders. That's one of the issues. Hopefully also they'll look back on our time and say, that's when humanity was able to unify, to do away with war, to cut funding for the militarism that is pervasive worldwide, to reconnect with the earth. And I'm not talking about just the 21st century, I'm talking about half a millennia or so will be viewed in this context, eons from now. This is that critical an issue. It's more important than our world wars put together. It's more important than any other crisis. Climate change is one of the main reasons that I became active politically. I'm using this presidential run as a vehicle for greater change. I'm not interested in political games within this party and outside this party. I'm running to help indigenous people survive this major threat of our time as their island nations go underwater, as drought dries everything up, as plants and animals disappear, as the insects that feed hatchlings are not in sync with the birds that are emerging because they're coming in at different times. This world is in chaos. It's completely out of balance. So yeah, one thing we could have is an independent auditing system for the Pentagon. Just by cutting the waste alone, that would fund programs in the Green New Deal so that we could increase efficiency of buildings and increase efficiency of transportation and cut emissions. These are all related. I could go on and on and on. Thank you, Holly.
We've been listening to the Green Party's Presidential Candidate Forum recorded on July 24th at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Tune in next week at this time for the conclusion of the forum, right here on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.